What's the name of this podcast?
Eugene
Cast.
How am I supposed to pronounce that?
Oig Cast.
A huge cast.
Huge cast.
You're listening to
Huge Cast.
That's right. You're listening to Huge Cast, a volunteer-powered cooperative where we talk with people who may or may not live in the Eugene, Oregon area. We think they have some really cool stories to tell, so let's get on with it.
Hey, this is JoJo, and today I'm talking with Maura Conlon McIver, best-selling author, no pressure, and finalist for the Oregon Book Award. That's like big. For her book, FBI Girl. She's also an essayist, a storyteller, and a consulting depth psychologist. Mm-hmm. Now, when I first read this, I was like, wait, what? And so I'm so excited to talk to you about that. And we'll be talking about all things that, what it is, what it means for people seeking a deeper understanding of themselves, and how we might be able to put some of those ideas into practice. But before we start, I just want you to know that I think you're my spirit animal. Because I read over all of your notes, and it was all of this wonderful, well-written, wonderful information. And then you're like, and I check my ocean cam. And being a water baby, I was just like, I think she's my spirit animal.
Oh, we can be each other's spirit animals.
I know.
That's what it's all about.
Great. So I am beyond the moon to talk to you today. So, you know, no pressure, but depth psychology, go.
Okay. Well, depth psychology is based on a lot of the principles of Carl Jung, which is he was a guy who studied the unconscious and all this deep stuff that resides in our psyches. You know, the image I love is an iceberg. So you're cruising along, you look out, you know, the window, and you see an iceberg and you see the top of it. And that's kind of like a rational mind, but what's below the iceberg is oftentimes very deep, in fact, deeper than what you see above the surface. And so depth psychology is the study of what lies below the surface of the water, you know, like this stuff that sometimes is beyond words, but we feel it. It's the mystery of our life.
Wow.
It's the stuff we dream about. It's the stuff we long for. And I think people are, you know, our human race from way back when has really been in touch with the deeper aspects of what it means to be human. We've, I think, forgotten that in our modern age.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. Do you think that more people, they don't even acknowledge what's under the water? Because I definitely see that all the time. You might like go, yeah, that bothers me, but then you just cruise right by it to something else.
I would say that's true. I mean, I don't think we live in a culture that invites us to look deep inside of ourselves. And I mean, for example, how many times do you go to a party and somebody says, oh, what gives you meaning in your life?
Right.
You know, usually it's, oh, what do you do for a living?
Right.
And it's a really easy way to categorize somebody, like how much money you make, what strata you're in. But I remember even going to Ireland when I was a teenager, and even beyond that, and nobody would ever say, oh, what do you do? It was more like, who are you? What stories do you have? And how do you see the world? And who's your family? And, you know, it occurred to me like, oh, we're more than just this consumer aspect of ourselves or what slot we feel. And, so that's sort of another conversation that we don't often have with people.
Because you think that those kinds of questions, especially in a social setting with people that you don't really know, do you think that those questions are, I mean, they sound very un-American, you know what I mean? Because we're just like, what do? You have a dog? What do? How much money do you make? But really not like, are you happy with your life?
Well, one of my favorite questions for people is, how long have you been in this country? Where did your parents come from? Oh, they're from Tennessee. Oh, they're from New Jersey. Oh, they're from Oregon. Where are your grandparents from? And I think that the stories come down to us from these other generations, even though the actual verbal stories don't get handed down. I think something gets handed down in our DNA. And I know for myself, I was given this very Irish name, Maura, born in L.A., I was the only Maura I knew. And so when my grandmother, who was born in Ireland, would come to visit us in L.A. from New York, where she had emigrated, I would ask her for stories about Ireland, where she grew up on a farm. And I really got on her nerves.
Really?
Oh, she finally said, "Will you stop asking me about that goddamn poverty-forsaken country? I have nothing to say." And so as a kid, you're like, oh, okay, well, it sounds like there's some stories there. And I think stories really connect us to who we are. You know, what matters to life? What's important? What wisdom are we supposed to pass on to other people? What, you know, who are we? So, I mean, for me at least, and one reason why I think I became a writer is that there was so much silence about that very issue of identity and association and, connection to even the land that we walk on.
Yeah. I was just talking to another friend of mine the other day, and she was just saying how much she's into dealing with her ancestry and ancestry.com and how many people are doing their lineage and all this stuff. And personally, I could give a rat's ass about it. It's not something that calls to my heart, but just the amount of people that are getting into it and doing DNA testing, which is a whole other conversation, is really surprising. It feels, just from what you just said, it feels like people are grasping for some of these stories outside of themselves. And is depth psychology grasping for those stories inside of yourself, or how to pull the outside in? I don't know. I'm grasping for understanding.
Yeah, you know, I think that we're at a time right now in our culture with everything going on. I mean, global climate change and institutions really in major hot water.
Yeah.
I think we're all starting to, you know, really look at, well, what is this about and how are we going to save ourselves?
Yeah.
And I think that part of that really is about starting with ourself and and asking, you know, who am I beyond my role as, all these categories that I feel in life, and starting to investigate what is beyond this materialist, consumer-oriented society, for example, and what is it that makes me happy and joyous, and how do I connect with people, and how do I make the world a better place? I mean, these are all relevant questions now that perhaps we weren't really raised to think about, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that when we were growing up, we were just taught to conform to the status quo, to fit in with our families, to do whatever our local surroundings were all about. But then I think we reach a time in our life, oftentimes in middle age, I would say, but increasingly in our younger years, where it's like, okay, I think I've been handed a script that maybe is slightly incomplete.
Yeah, or is never fit.
Never fit, yeah. And to really honor that and say, oh, what did I come into the world with?
Yeah.
I mean, for myself, I remember going to church when I was a kid. We were raised Irish Catholic, tons of priests and nuns in the family. And I would love to go to church and sit and watch the sunlight coming into stained glass windows. And I would just look at that, like red and blue and gold and yellow, and just ignore what was going on up there, you know, with the priest or whatever. Like, okay, all right, got it. But the real action seemed to be somewhere else. And so I think we all come into the world with something that captured our attention as a kid. Like, oh, I loved color and light. What did you love? What did you love when you were growing up?
You know, I'm still a big fan of throwing rocks in the water.
There you go. And yeah. Where was that?
I grew up in Portland. And so this was before it was hip. So my family would actually go up the Columbia River a lot. We'd go up to the Columbia River for day picnics and stuff and throw rocks in the water. And then we'd go to the ocean a lot. And then when I was 10, my folks bought a house on the Oregon coast. That wasn't on the coast, but up a river. And that was where we would go all the time. And so throwing rocks, climbing on rocks, just walking around and finding rocks. I'm a rock hound too. The thrill of the hunt is real.
And that, I think that thrill of the hunt is what we're all about. and the fact that you have experienced that as a young girl is with you forever. It never goes away.
No.
So how, you know, I think that's the question. How do we reinstate that thrill, like, for the rest of our lives? And for me, that's what depth psychology is, as well as writing. Like, it's the thrill of the hunt, and that's what it's all about. Like, life is dynamic. The universe is not static. It's all changing, unfolding, and
fast right now.
Fast right now.
So fast. So fast. And I can't imagine how hard it is to be somebody who doesn't want to take a deeper look, because it feels like the universe is just forcing the issue, to be quite honest. It feels like it's being forced. The issue is for climate change, universal, global upheaval. And some of those things that we just went, can't do anything about it. Now people are just like, oh, hell no. You know, they pick a cause and they go after it. Definitely has been happening to, like, my life has blown up in the last few years.
Well, I think it's a really good opportunity for everybody to share their personal story. Like, I know a lot of us feel like we've got to get out there and be activists, which is really important. But I know that... there was a Jungian psychologist who was in Eugene recently, and she is writing the memoir. And somebody in the audience said to her, well, how can you write a memoir? The world is falling apart. You should be out there on the streets and you know, and being an activist. And she said, you know, that's really a great question, but we all need to tap into what we're about as individuals with our own stories and look into what our own inherited wounds are, who we are as individuals. I mean, we have to connect into our own souls before we can really go out there and put it out there in the world and start changing things.
Yeah.
You know, it's really when you get to that calm place inside, like, oh, I get it. This is who I am. This is what I'm about. You know, like, I'm a writer, I'm a poet. I mean, I'm just saying, you're a voice talent. There are these embodiments of talents that we've inherited or we've cultivated, and to really honor that and then look at that as a gift, and how can I share that with other people?
For sure. I mean, RuPaul always says this on Drag Race, you know, how can you love, you know, how can you love somebody else if you don't love yourself, basically?
Mm.
And when... I found this with myself, and I've found this with other people, that when we've landed on a truth about who we are, like a real truth, I'm a rock hound, or in my case, I go to bed early.
Mm.
And I catch so much crap for being like early to bed, early rise girl.
Mm.
But I could care less. I don't feel defensive about it. I don't feel like I don't have to do anything. Someone's like, you want to go out and do this? I'm like, that's at night, right? I'm like, no. But it's this calm knowing. So, but it takes some time to find out what those are. If you're a writer or a voice talent, or you go to bed early, or you love yoga or whatever, I just find that those truths lend me a sense of calm that I don't find everywhere.
Oh, I think we don't want to feel like we're all alone in the world. I mean, we're social animals, and I think we want to feel witnessed in who we are.
Yeah.
And so to have the nerve to say, I'm a rock hound, I go to bed early, you know, I'm this, I'm that, and to embrace it. And then you find you're not alone. There are other people who are rock hounds,
yeah,
who like to go to bed early, who like to watch stones skip across the pond, who like to watch, I mean, like I was saying earlier, I love, I mean, sometimes I go to the San Clemente CAM site. It's because I have family in San Clemente, and I grew up in Southern California, and I miss the ocean living here in Eugene.
Yeah.
And so I go online and I pull up so I can watch the ocean and just watch the shore. And like, I do that. I think, well, is that weird? Well, no, it's what I do, and it has meaning. I mean, it connects me. I come from many generations of sea people. And so, you know, it's just not, you know, it's just not like something to entertain myself with. It has deep meaning. So I think if we all could look at what we're doing and go, oh, this has deep meaning to me, and really honor that from that deeper place rather than, well, I'll do this before I'm, you know, taking off for the dinner date or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. When I was talking to another friend of mine the other day, and she was saying, it's just really nice to be seen. And so when we share who we are like that, is it a way that we're trying to be seen? Or do you think more people, it's that double-edged sword, maybe, about wanting to desperately be seen and heard, but being afraid to be seen and heard?
Well, it's a great question. And I think the irony is that we live in a world where we are trained to think of ourselves as individuals. And really, when it comes right down to it, we are tribal and we are social.
Yeah.
And we want to feel like we have our village. And a lot of times that's not really about your ego. It's not really about your outward, you know, thing that you're doing. It's just for who you are. Oh, you know, there she is. You know, there's the gal who throws stones across the lake. Or here's the storyteller. Here's the cook. You know, here's the one who starts the fire. I mean, it's like these deeper things. And I think there is a saying that says we do call each other into being.
Oh, totally.
And we've, I think, forgotten that. And I think in indigenous cultures, I mean, right now I'm studying Celtic spirituality.
Cool.
And there's something called the Anamkara. Perhaps you heard of John O'Donohue. I know he was big coming to Oregon. He was from Ireland. But
sounds familiar, but
we're not meant to go through this world alone. We're really meant to go through this world with somebody else seeing our soul. And
in a real way, not the Instagram way, right?
I don't think Instagram and soul are to be mentioned in the same sentence.
Like, YouTube following does not mean that you're being...
No, we're talking like beyond electronic social media here. Good. You know, we're talking like turn it off, turn off the lights in the room, light a candle, put on some Yo-Yo Ma...
I love Yo-Yo Ma so much.
I agree. I do too. And like listen into this deeper space. I mean, we're at a time right now with the light, you know, the light diminishing and the night coming
times.
Earlier. It's the dark time. And I mean, I know for the Celtic people, this is their new year. So it's like preparing for what's trying to be birthed within ourselves in this dark time. So you know,
I love the dark time.
Do you?
I mean, I like it all, but really, it is. I love the dark time when it's dark at 4:30 and dark.
Did you always like it that way?
Probably not. I mean, I'm starting to really embrace like light at 5 o'clock in the morning during the summer when all the windows are open. But there is something so delicious to me. Like this morning, I got up at 4:30. Didn't mean to, but I was awake, so might as well get up. So I got up at 4:30, and of course it was super dark, but it was also just shrouded in mist, and it felt so cozy, and so it was just like a good place to have deep thoughts.
Yes.
It's harder for me to have like, awesome, let's go surfing and deep thoughts. I'm just like, well, it doesn't really work for me, but the darkness seems to lend itself for the interior work that I find as important to me as breathing.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something about embracing that.
You
and
know,
it's hard.
Yeah. Really?
Counterintuitive, perhaps.
Really? I don't know. It's so part of how I am now that it feels too hard to try to turn that off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can tell when the balance is not, you know, there's a disruption in the force, you know, when I don't get a chance to do that. And the penalties are tend to be steeper for me now. When I can't seem to get some alignment going, the universe just goes, you're not listening to me. So I am going to like make your back go out.
Well, you know, we're part of nature.
Yeah.
And there's something about that, you know, and starting to pay attention to what calls to us. Like, oh, here's this morning ritual. I need to get up and do this.
I need to get up and do this.
You know, maybe there's something I do before going to Apple News or the New York Times or whatever. Oh, yeah. Maybe I need to have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or whatever and meditate or something. I mean, to just allow ourselves to be at that more peaceful place, especially now in these times. I mean, for a long time, I would get up and watch the news or dial into the newspaper, and now I don't do it.
Yeah.
I I do my meditation. I have my, actually, I will admit, I have my coffee while I'm meditating. Because
that's genius.
I like Paradox.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I've found that ritual in terms of just like it's ritual or schedule. I'm not really sure what it is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels like schedule and sometimes it feels like a morning ritual. Mm-hmm. But it definitely, it gets me on the right path every day.
Mm.
And so I'm thinking about this gal that I had as an intern a number of years ago. And so she's like probably 27 now, and I haven't talked to her in a number of years, but she's the Instagram culture. She's Instagram, posts everything, you know, her thoughts and all that stuff. And it's not that I don't think she has a real connection. It just seems so not, it just see what you want to see. And I see that a lot with people that start comparing themselves, especially younger people, that they compare themselves with what they see out there instead of what they feel in their soul and hearts.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I live close to the University of Oregon, and a lot of times when I'm passing by campus, I see a lot of the college students, you know, with buds in their ears. I mean, pretty much everybody. And I hearken back to my college days in the last century. I think, oh, well, we were kind of forced to talk to each other in real time.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't go back. The world changes. Technology moves on. But I know when I was traveling abroad recently, I just made a point to go up to people in train stations. And even though I knew what time the train was leaving, I knew what time the bus was leaving, I'd go up to some young person with earbuds and I'd ask them a question. Oh, like, do you know where the bus leaves, what corner it's leaving from, or do you know what time, do you know? And I actually knew the answer, but I just wanted to connect with some other human while I was traveling. And every single time they were so happy, and I would say eager, to take off their earbuds and say, oh, well, yes. And then we engage in this conversation. So I think that people are connected to technology, but they're searching for something that's actually right in front of them. Perhaps if somebody like us reaches out with a question and just starts to initiate a conversation.
Sneaky engagement. I like it. And where were you when you were doing this?
Well, most recently I remember being in Dublin and in London, and I mean, obviously that can happen anywhere in the world, but right. I tend to take more trains and buses and stuff like that when I'm traveling abroad than here in town. But I think the whole point is that if you come up to somebody with their earbuds and just start talking to them, they're not going to, you know, be exasperated that you're talking. I think they mostly welcome it. Like, oh, I get to connect with another human being.
Do you think that's true here in the U.S. as well?
I would like to think so, because I think that we're all descendants from some other place.
Okay, I'm not sure how, like, explain more.
Well, I mean, if you start talking to somebody, I mean, I do this all the time, and it drives my husband crazy.
You mean lineage?
Yeah, like, okay. Where are you from? Where are your parents from, your grandparents? Oh, well, all of a sudden, we're back in Europe. We're back in Asia. We're back in, you know, South America. We've all arrived here. I mean, my grandmother came from Ireland. Your grandparents came from?
Denmark.
Yeah. You know, like, we don't really talk about it. I mean, if we're white European descendants, we don't normally say, I identify as an Irish American. You know, we're usually Caucasian. So those stories just sort of fall by the wayside.
Yeah.
But they're there for everybody.
Yeah. Family stories were always part of my growing up. Because my dad's family lost their farm in the Dust Bowl. And so that was a huge part of his understanding of the world and how he started to put some of his stuff, some of his fears into traction, you know? Just the fear of losing stuff and needing to stockpile some things and stuff.
That was the Dust Bowl.
It was big.
Very
big. It was
huge.
Big. Yeah, it was big.
Did you see the Ken Burns documentary on that?
I didn't.
Very painful. I mean, I watched a lot of his stuff.
Yeah.
I could barely get through that. I mean, just the loss of people's land. It's huge.
It was huge. It devastated their family. So it was Nebraska, Mm-hmm. And then they came out to Oregon and stuff, and it took a while for them to find where they were going to land. But, you know, they didn't have much, if anything. I mean, what they did bring out is, I have my grandmother's china. Mm-hmm. And we were talking earlier, and I'm not married, and that was never a big thing for me. It wasn't that the marriage thing wasn't a big thing, but it was just like the white dress and the big day and the china. Mm-hmm. And that, like, I don't give a crap about that. I never have. That's the only thing I wanted was my grandmother's china, because it was one of the few things that she saved from the Dust Bowl.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great question. Like, where do we land? How do we land? What's important to us when we land?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people talk about downsizing. Like, it's kind of this trendy word. But, you know, at the end of the day, what's really important to you?
Yeah. You and know? Why?
And why? And a lot of times it's these items, like your china, or like my grandmother's sewing machine that she gave to my mother when my mother was engaged in 1949. Like, that's the most important thing to me. It doesn't work, but I need to have that in my world.
Nice.
Like, we all have. And I think that brings us back to depth psychology. You know, it's like, what do we have right around us that connects us to these lost stories, but somehow we know they're important to who we are and the way we live our lives? Somehow we're keeping something moving forward or into the next generation that's related to all that. I mean, like, for example, my Nana was born in New York City, my mom's mom.
This is not the Irish one, then.
That's my dad's mother. Oh, we won't talk about anymore because we'll have to go into the Irish brogue. But my mom's mom was the valedictorian in her graduating class in New York City.
Wow.
And had great dreams to become something. And she couldn't fulfill those because she had to support her family that was, you know, they were poor.
And she was a woman.
And she was
a woman.
Back
in the day.
And I inherited her sewing machine.
Wow.
I never knew her. She died when I was 2 years old. So, you know, I think we inherit things that kind of land us wherever we are, and especially those of us who are on the West Coast and, say, in Oregon. Like, a lot of us are from somewhere else, and we have these things in our lives where they provoke questions and stories, and they're not superficial. They're not about, oh, what's on sale at Costco? I mean, they're about, like,
yeah,
what are you bringing forward, in, you know, from these generations past that really speaks to the world today? And yeah.
And I see some of my dear friends and people, they go through a divorce or a death or something that's big. It's a big moment, and they have to go through their life or their parents' life or whatever. And I'm always fascinated by what they're just like, this has got to leave my house. It has not one single good memory. Mm. Or I have to keep this. I know it's ridiculous, but I have to just keep this. Mm-hmm. And so I've watched some friends, like, you're just like, wow, that's, you know, that's commitment to give that giant dresser away. She just like, nope, reminds me of something else. It's out.
Well, I think it just goes to show that we're not just who we think we are in our minds.
No.
You know, we're connected to physical objects in our life, physical places that help define us and create meaning and connection. And when we invite somebody into our home, you know, there's something about that kind of hospitality where somebody's not coming just to visit us, but they're interacting with all these collection of objects that represent pieces of our soul, for lack of a better term.
For sure. I am very careful who I let in my house. Mm-hmm. It is 100% reflection of who I am. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, I'm not really sure if I'm ready for people to see this, if I don't know you already, because there's some opposing views in my house that I love. You know, you're just like yoga and coffee.
Well, I think a lot of people meet at restaurants and bars and have for years. I mean, how often times do you get an invitation to come to somebody's home?
Yeah.
I think in the olden times, I mean, my parents' generation, there was a lot more interaction in people's homes.
Yeah.
And now we don't really go into each other's homes.
Yeah.
I mean, I lived in Eugene for like 4 years before we finally went, oh, I think it's time for a gathering at our house. And it felt like, oh my gosh, you know, it's not big enough. It's this, it's that. And it's really not about the limiting thoughts like that, I mean, we're eager to walk into each other's larger space.
For sure.
It's radical hospitality, and I think we need to do more of it.
I love that. Yes. Radical hospitality. And it doesn't really matter whether you have dust bunnies. Nobody really cares. I know. I've got some of the the dust bunnies.
You know what? It's really refreshing for somebody to say, you know what? I love you. I love your house. I love your space. You got some dust on, you know, your cabinets, but whatever. And I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of grateful that she noticed that dust. I never did.
Right.
I don't notice those kinds of things, but somebody else does. It's great. You know, it takes a village.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I just kind of go, there's a certain number of hours in the day, and dusting things doesn't even come close to the top 25. Like, I don't care.
No, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Dust is a four-letter word, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm just like, let that go. It'll be there tomorrow, right?
And we'll let somebody else deal with
it. Right,
yeah. Like the wind, for example. Just open your window.
Right. Well, you know, that's another definition of who we are and what matters. Mm. It's like, what matters to you? Mm-hmm. What matters? How does it matter? My mom is forever like trying to dust her house, and she lives on a farm. She's got critters. She leaves doors open, mm-hmm. and she's like, I've got to dust. And I'm like, why? Mm. You know, everyone they're like, we know you have a dog. As someone said to me, it's dog hair. It's both a fashion accessory and a condiment in her house. Because, you know, it's just like there's a lot of life that goes on there.
Well, I got to meet your mom. You know that.
That's right. Yeah. That's how we met.
We were on a farm tour in Yahats and ran into a place, and your mom was there, an amazing farmer. Beautiful green thumb.
Oh, my God. She's amazing.
Yes.
And crazy.
It all goes together.
Yeah. Well, you know, when my dad died, I asked her if she wanted to leave the farm, because it's 15 acres and she's got two giant greenhouses and she raises cows and it's a thing.
I didn't know you had cows.
She raises cows in the summer, mm-hmm. and she's 85. Mm. And I was like, well, what do you want to do? And she's like, no, I'm staying. Mm-hmm. And she has thrived. She just, it's insane. I just kind of go, I go down there and she puts me to work for a weekend and I'm like, I got to go home. I'm exhausted. Yeah.
Well, you know, it probably keeps her going. And what's the alternative anyway? I mean, it sounds kind of exciting. I mean, I know sometimes when I just need to get out of town, I'll drive out to one of the wineries around town just because it's a destination like Starburst or Sweet Cheeks or, you know, one of those kinds
Pick one.
And part of the reason why I like to drive out there is I get to pass by cows and goats and other animals out in the pastures. And I practically stop in my car and just look at them. And I feel so delighted. And I think, how could somebody from LA, where I grew up, be so delighted seeing these animals? But there's just something about their
peaceful
rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about this deeper place. I mean, the animals totally embody it. And I think we have to go out there and see them to get reminded of that.
So how long have you lived in Eugene? And what brought you up here?
So I've been here 5 years.
Oh, wow. So you're like a newbie.
Kind of, yeah. And then I lived here once upon a time earlier in my life, but went up to Portland for 12 years and then came back 5 years ago. Been in Oregon for about 24 years now.
Wow.
After living all over the country, New York, L.A., San Francisco, Iowa City, North Carolina. I've done the national tour.
That's right. Wow. For jobs or?
For jobs.
Giggles or?
For all sorts of things. I've got gypsy blood, but for education, for graduate school, for work.
That's right, because you're Dr. Mora.
I have a PhD in depth psychology. I married a guy who was a newspaper reporter and decided to become a surgeon. So that's right. Well, you know, I'm done writing police stories. I think I'll go and operate on people's guts. So it's been a wild journey.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then we were back east for 10 years and we thought, well, where are we going to move back to? And we both are from California. I'm from LA and my husband's from San Francisco Bay Area. And so we came to Eugene. So there you go. I think we all have our stories of how we ended up here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Eugene was a good fit for me when it was, I lived in Seattle for 15 years and it was time to go at some point.
Yes. How long have you been back here now?
I moved here in the, 2001. I came back from visiting my folks in December of 2000. And when I hit the skyline of Seattle, I went, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah.
And then I was down here and I sold my house in Seattle, bought a house down here, and I was here in May.
You know, so one thing we were talking about earlier was the people who are based in Eugene, but who whose work is beyond the borders of Eugene.
Yeah.
And how sometimes we don't really know about each other, or we're kind of so busy doing our thing privately that we don't have time to connect. And do you find that that's something that you're growing into, or finding other people who are based here but doing work that goes beyond the borders of Eugene?
I am constantly surprised by who lives here and what they're doing. That was really, that's what I love to talk to people about that live here in Eugene, because mm-hmm. it gives us a level of lifestyle that's delicious. We have water, we have bike paths, we have river, we have ocean, we have all this wonderful stuff at our fingertips.
Do you like the entrepreneurial climate here?
You know, I don't even know how to answer that. My folks were entrepreneurs, so mm-hmm. that was just kind of, I was always kind of
in your blood.
Yeah, that was totally in my blood. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, at Voice Talent, I just run it as a business, you know. It's, but the hard part is that it's alone in a small, dark room for a long period of time, and it's very easy to get isolated.
Yeah. Well, I think we all need to find each other. I mean, I know sometimes I'll tell people my background. I've worked in media in L.A. and New York and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm an author and depth psychologist, and they'll say, oh, are you here for the university? Like, that's the
right.
first question I get. And I say, well, no, I'm not. I mean, I'm actually here because my husband's work brought us here, and I can do what I do from wherever. But I think in Eugene, there's been this automatic association, like, are you here with the university or the hospital? And I think there's a lot of us who are creative professionals that need to find each other. And some of us are newly arrived. I think some of us have been here for 30 years, and there's really deep networks there. But I think what I'm finding and hearing is that a lot more people in the last several years are moving here from other places to escape high rents or the rat race. And I think it's an opportunity to reach out and build more networks.
There are tons of creative people here in town. There's a huge writing community in general here in town, mm-hmm. and specifically, you know, science fiction, and just there's tons of opportunity. And that's the thing, that's where I take it on myself, is there's as much opportunity to go out and be connected to this community as you want to be. And for the first 10 years that I lived here, I was watching my father progressively get more ill and more ill. And to be out in the world was not good for me. And then after he passed, it was just like, I'm just going to wear the cloak of sadness for a few years. You know, and I mean, that's how my life progressed. And so for the last 2 years, I'll just say the last couple of years, it's really only this time that I'm kind of coming out again, just to see what's out there and meet new people and talk to new people, like this podcast. Mm-hmm. And it is a good place. And I'm constantly surprised by people that are doing amazing things and following their passion, whether it's for work or for hobby, it doesn't matter. I love talking to people about their passion, what drives them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
versus just coming to Eugene to retire, which I think is sort of the old, you know, definition, where like young people come to retire.
Yeah.
I was talking to some media person in town, and he said, oh, yeah, Eugene, this is where like hippies come. So they never, because there's no work here. And that's why people come here. And I thought, how sad.
Well, then you're just not looking very hard, because I mean, to be honest, I don't do a lot of voiceover work in Eugene.
Right.
And I don't know if they just don't want local talent. Whatever their reasons are, that's totally fine. I have a global reach because of the internet. I believe the internet has changed everything.
Yes.
You know, you have a much larger reach, and you can do an entire book tour from your Skype account,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't need Eugene to provide me with a living, but I'm so grateful that there is a gentleness about being here.
Yeah, there is. There's like a compassion to the place. And I think, you know, your image of throwing rocks out into the lake and like the ripple effects. And I think, you know, it's sort of that combination of like where we're living is where the rock hits the water.
Yeah.
You have to have that. You have to have your place. And then the ripples out from that become these other conversations and networks that are both here and going beyond here, you know, globally and all. So to somehow put the two together is really a powerful thing. And to me, the concept of place is really important, how you embrace where you live. But we're also in a world where it's like we love where we live, and then we're also connection, you know, we're also connecting to the world outside of what's beyond our white picket fence.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really do feel like a sense of compassion and depth. And I do believe that people are ready for a deeper conversation about themselves, how they see the world. All of the stuff that's happening politically has energized people to kind of go, do I think that's right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that's okay with me anymore? Or is that just something that I just ignored and moved on? I don't think we have that... We just can't let that happen anymore, you know?
And I think we can look at our own ancestors, our parents, our grandparents. I mean, your grandparents with the Dust Bowl and my grandmother coming from Ireland and never being able to talk about it because it was so traumatic.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're in this amazing country called America with all these challenges, but we're also full of these stories from our own ancestors, regardless of our skin color, about struggle and trauma. And you know, the more we can get in touch with that and really transform that into connection and possibility and conversation, reaching out, that, you know, it's really everybody's opportunity.
And a deeper connection between individuals is just, it's a stronger connection, unless I'm completely mental, which is possible, but it seems like when you hear somebody's story, I mean, they're always talking about that when there's, you know, a skinhead and an African-American person, and they actually sit into a room and a talk, and they, you know, miraculously they realize that they're both human beings. They both have stories to tell. And once you can get past whatever it is that's bothering you, and it's a story and they're a person.
Well, I have to say, I mean, one huge influence in my life was growing up with a brother who had Down syndrome. And my brother Joe was born in 66, as in 1966, uh-huh. when that was called mongoloidism, and it was off in its own category, and they were all siloed off. And as a young girl, when I was 76 when Joe was born, he was like our love Buddha in our family. And I thought, how interesting that all the experts are calling him like severely retarded, but he like hugs in the restaurants and hugs at church and hugs, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, there's what the outside world says. It's those adults talking. And what people like my brother Joe represented was like, oh, it's like, we just want love. We want connection. We want belonging. And so that's what I've carried through, is like, okay, there's this layer out there called adultism.
Yeah.
And then there's everything below that, which we know is true. Like, we want to hear each other's stories. We want to find where we connect. We want to just, where it's, we're hardwired to do.
Yeah. We want to be seen and we want to be heard. I have a friend he just turned 99. Stu, the best boyfriend I ever had.
Aww.
He's really awesome. And he was in World War II, and I love hearing his stories about, you know, how he grew up. And, you know, there was no internet. There was no TV when he grew up,
mm-hmm.
you know, radio.
Yeah.
But it was how music was so important to him. And I just love that. And he's really good at just bringing you right back to when that time was.
It kind of makes you miss that time in a way, doesn't it?
You know,
that era.
Yeah, but like you were saying, that everything changes, and that, you know, more technology or more faster paced or whatever, it's all good stuff. It's moving us forward, but I think that there's a real shortage of being, just being.
Well, I think it's great what you're doing here and just, you know, asking questions. And I think we don't ask each other questions. You know, we're so busy in our heads or just talking about our whatever worries us. But to really reach out and ask those deeper questions, even if it's being at a train station or on the corner of Agate and
19th.
And yeah, just asking somebody, hey, you know, like, when's this new track going to be done that they're building at Hayward's Field? I mean, just right, like, it just those little single moments, you just never know what kind of conversations you're going to get into.
Yeah. And we don't have to travel abroad to have them.
True.
Right.
Right.
So if someone was going to start their journey to a deeper understanding of who they are, what would be a good first stop for them?
Well, I always invite people to imagine a time when they were a kid, maybe in their first 14 years of life, and think of a time when they were out in nature. And did somebody, you know, have a favorite tree they like to climb, or part of an ocean they like to hang out in, or a lake? And what was it like to be there? What did you do? What filled your imagination? And how does that feel in your body? Can you go there right now? And a lot of times people can. It's like, oh yeah, I used to love going into our pool at night. There's no lights, it was just dark, and I could feel the moisture and hear the crickets. And so I think if we can connect to that, it starts to connect us again to a place of wonder. And we can take that place of wonder into other parts of our life and go, oh, what would it be like to be in that place of wonder here? So going back to those first 14 years of life for me is always a great invitation.
Oh, that's great. I love a sense of wonder, because there's so much.
There's so much.
There's so much. And if you're not full of a little bit of wonder right now as you're listening to this podcast, ask yourself, there's so much to wonder at. Just look up.
Turn your computer off at night. Put your phone down. Open the door. Walk outside. Look at the night sky. Look at the stars. You don't have to know what constellations are up there, what planets are showing their faces.
Nope.
Look at the trees and just breathe it all in and ask yourself, how do I feel doing this? That's all you really have to do.
Yeah. Well, that makes me happy.
It makes me happy. I can't wait for the sun to go down
tonight. I know. This is a perfect segue or ending to our conversation. But where can people find you if they want to know more about you or more about your book, FBI Girl, and when your new book is coming out, and where can they find you?
Great. So I have a website, and it's basically my name with .com on the end. So it's Maura, M-A-U-R-A, Conlon, Conlon.com.
Nice. And is there a coming out date for your new book?
I'm happy to share that today I've just sent off my new book to my editor. So
congratulations.
Fingers crossed, 2020.
Wow, that's a big moment. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It's a book about the mother lines. So
wow,
exploring our feminine legacy.
Okay, well, we'll just have you back to talk about that.
We'll talk about that.
That's
later.
A deep well.
We'll have some tea for that, some crumpets.
Perfect.
It's a longer conversation.
Thank you so much for coming today. I've adored this conversation so much.
Oh, thank you. We could talk for hours.
Oh, obviously. And maybe we will later.
Maybe we shall.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you for coming.
All right. Thanks, JoJo.
Okay. And now for some housekeeping. HugeCast would like to thank its contributors, volunteers, and sponsors. A huge thanks goes out to Mark Davis at Eugene Tech for providing guidance and enthusiasm, to Trifoya for providing equipment, space, beverages, and the occasional pizza, and to That Supergirl for providing web hosting. Our producer is Kimberly Noel. Music and soundscapes conceived by Mike Jones. Audio editors include Mike Jones and Christopher Mitchell. Audio engineer is Christopher Mitchell.
HugeCast hosts are the amazing Adam Wendt and the delightful JoJo Jensen. If you like what you hear, please give us a review. 5 stars would be nice. And who knows, we might even read your comments during the show. So thanks for listening, or sleeping through it. Either way, thanks.